So this ordinance does essentially three things. And the first thing that it does is it mandates the adoption of traffic impact fees for the first time in Seattle. The second thing it does is it sets a ceiling for those fees. And then finally, it specifies the methodology by which those fees will be calculated. All of those things are substantive rather than procedural. So looking first at the proposed ordinance, Attachment A, on page 2, policy T10.7.
I'm sorry, let me get caught up to you. Attachment A?
Attachment 1.
Right.
Page 2, the second policy from the bottom, policy T10.7, currently reads, consider use of transportation impact fees to help fund transportation system improvements needed to serve growth. And the proposed amendment would remove the word consider and simply direct, use transportation impact fees. So currently, the city's authorized to think about this, and after this amendment, the city would be directed to do it. And that is a crucial substantive component of this proposal. The other two components of the proposal appear on Attachment 2. They're most clearly explained on Attachment 2, page 1, under the heading Existing System Value Methodology. And the second paragraph of that page talks really about the cap on the impact fees. And it says that initially the city will determine the existing value of the transportation system using both the value of existing infrastructure and the land in the right-of-way, divide that amount by the number of current PM peak hour trips to establish a current value per person trip, and the impact fee rate can't exceed that. So there is a ceiling, and it's established here by this ordinance. Next, the third thing that the ordinance does is it goes on to talk about how the fee will be determined. And the total cost of impact fee eligible capacity improvements, which are those listed on the next page and depicted on the page after that, are calculated based on the list of projects required to serve new development. That total amount is then divided by the number of new person trips forecast over a 12-year period, which is the time frame for improvements listed in the program, to establish the cost per person trip of needed capacity improvements. And the impact fee rates by land use are calculated based on that cost. So the amount of the transportation impact fee is determined based on the cost of this quite large list of projects that appear on Attachment 2, page 2, and are depicted on Attachment 2, page 3. And the total cost of all those extensive projects are divided by the new trips to establish the amount of the impact fee. And so all of those things are not, they're not simply procedural. They don't simply lay a groundwork. They mandate what the city's going to do moving forward with regard to its transportation impact fees. And because of that, this ordinance causes injury in fact to the appellants as described in the declarations that we've submitted in response to the motion. And these examples aren't exhaustive. They're not all of the members of the coalition, but they are illustrative of the impacts that will occur. So particularly, those fall into two categories. First, coalition members own property that is adjacent to the projects that are listed and depicted there in Attachment 2. While Ms. Anderson argues that this ordinance does not authorize the construction of those projects, what it does do is mandate the funding of those projects. And under well-established law, SEPA requires that the impacts of those projects be considered now at this phase. Particularly, WAC 197.11.055 sub 2, cited in our brief, states the fact that proposals may require future agency approvals or environmental review doesn't preclude their current consideration, so long as there's information available at the time. King County Boundary Review Board, also cited in our brief, had to do with an annexation decision. And in that case, there was a very similar claim to the one being made by the city here, that it was just an annexation. That annexation in and of itself didn't have impacts. But the court rejected that argument. Court said in that case an EIS was at issue, that an EIS should be prepared when significant adverse effects are probable, not when they are inevitable. And that an EIS is required if, based on the totality of the circumstances, future development is probable following the action and if it will have a significant adverse impact. Similarly, in Lands Council versus Washington State Parks and Recreation Commission, also cited in our brief, the court considered the classification of part of a state park for recreational skiing. And the court discussed a similar argument to the one that's being made here by the city and said land use approvals often proceed in phases and gave the example, a couple examples. One, a conditional use permit for a shopping center that's followed by construction permits, and said that none of the implementing permits, though, disguises a step at which the decision actually allowing the use was made. And here, the decision mandating the impact fees and how they will be determined is being made now, and the city needs to analyze the environmental impacts of that now. With regard to the transportation projects, the decision mandating their funding is being made now, and the city needs to analyze the impacts now. In our brief, we have included two separate declarations specifically addressing a few different projects of our clients that are immediately adjacent to specific transportation improvement projects that will be funded as a result of this ordinance, and I won't go into the details of those, but I certainly can answer questions about them if you have them. The second bucket of impacts that that will result from this proposal has to do, and is addressed in our brief, has to do specifically with impacts to pipeline projects. So our clients have projects that are currently proposed but will not receive their building permits until after the impact fee is adopted, and therefore would be subject to the fee. And those projects, not only will, for the residential projects, not only will the housing become less affordable, but specific physical characteristics of those projects will be affected. In particular, the example given in the declarations is parking. Parking will be reduced. It's a costly thing to provide. That's a physical impact, not an economic impact. And the city has said we're not adopting the fee at this moment. We're just adopting the comp plan amendment. But again, under the case law that I've just described, this comp plan amendment mandates the adoption of the fee, and therefore the environmental review for that has to occur now. The city's also suggested that we don't know right now what the fee will be or what it will apply to. And SEPA does have a solution for that. In Heritage Baptist Church, cited in our brief, the court held this is a rezone from limited open space to general commercial, and the court held that in analyzing the environmental impacts of that rezone, an EIS for a non-project action is adequate where the environmental consequences are discussed in terms of the maximum potential development potential of the property. And here, we do have bookends around what these transportation impact fees will look like. There is a cap that's specified in this comp plan amendment, and there are no other limitations specified in the comp plan amendment. city wanted to rely on other potential future limitations, it needed to either include them in the comp plan amendment or include them as mitigation in the DNS, and it did neither. In their environmental review of this proposal, the city needs to look at the maximum impacts of this proposal. Just briefly, with regard to the city's briefing on economic interests, the case law cited by the city and the case law cited by appellants both essentially agree purely economic impacts aren't subject to SEPA, but economic impacts that lead to physical impacts to the environment are. And in this case, appellants have clearly alleged impacts to the physical environment resulting from this action. And I won't go into that in any more detail because I think we've thoroughly briefed it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. With regard to the standing question, while we did not get declarations by name, we did provide declarations that establish that there are builders and people that are providers of housing that will be adversely affected by and are already being currently injured by the uncertainty created by the proposal itself within the decisions they're making about how to move forward with projects. Taken together with mandatory housing affordability, which will pass this month, that uncertainty is actually creating particularized injury in that form of uncertainty. We would rely on the on our declaration to establish that, but also, since we're consolidated, substantially on the comments that were submitted specifically by Seattle Mobility Coalition to accentuate or enhance that particularized injury. To the question of economic injury, going back to the one question that came up in our original filing, which was the piecemeal approach of this, our concern and the reason why we appealed is that it's difficult I think what the city is asking the hearings examiner to believe is that they would go through the process of passing a comp plan amendment with no intention to actually passing impact fees. So this is a situation in which they typically would bring together all of that package together, comp plan and the legislation for the impact fees, as well as a project list. Instead, they're just presenting the comprehensive plan amendment. And our point is that is a questionable practice given previous established precedent that all of those be forwarded together and that all the impacts be evaluated before the DNS is issued. With regard to the zone of interest question, the SEPA checklist clearly has questions in it that we provided that are economic in nature with regard to housing price, affordability, and the production of housing. And so to claim that our appeal is out of the zone of interest, I think, as we've established, that's not true. The documents the city relies on in the legislation it proposed clearly establish that they believe that impact fees increase housing prices and therefore affect affordability and therefore should have been subjected to the SEPA checklist in terms of determining what that impact would be. With regard to the term lost profit, which was mentioned in the city's motion, we never used the term lost profit, although we did, as I said, point back to how the economic impact of additional costs in the production of housing is and will change the behavior of the producers of housing in a way that it has adverse environmental impacts. And again, price, I think, is economic, but the nature of the fees affecting price, affecting behavior of the producers, does have an environmental impact. And again, while we're not establishing the impact, we do think that the process should have established the potential impact and put that forward before they issued a DNS. Because we do think there is going to be impact. And finally, the project list is puzzling to me, again, in terms of establishing what will follow from the comp plan amendment, in terms of their argument that the comp plan amendment is that our claim is conjectural. These projects that are listed are either projects that are going to be included in an impact fee legislative package, so they've submitted those, or again, they're sort of hypothetical. One of the problems that I think the proposal that they're pursuing has is that the state law does not allow impact fees to be used for existing deficiencies. In particular, the Othello Street Station, which is on their list, already has funding from an existing levy. So it's confusing to me that they would argue that our claims are conjectural when they're already advancing specific projects that are either already funded, in which case why would they need the impact fee to fund that project, or they already have plans to move those funds around. So it seems to me that they failed to establish the conjectural nature of our appeal and that it's out of the zone of interest, and I believe that we have established standing and clearly have should be able to move forward with the arguments that the DNS should have been, that there should be more analysis done by the city. Thank you.
Thank you. Question, the copy of the provided by Seattle Mobility Coalition. Was this already in the motions record?
Yes, that's a copy of an attachment to Mr. Freeman's declaration submitted by the city.
I can just treat this as illustrated. I had a couple questions. The Seattle Mobility Coalition indicated that property owners would be impacted by reduced affordability. Essentially, it seemed to be that they were invoking an impact on the residents of the proposed projects. Does the Seattle Mobility Coalition represent the residents?
The coalition has members who reside in Seattle. The particular projects that were addressed in, obviously we don't have a declaration from a resident. The coalition has members who live in Seattle. I think more broadly, our claim relating to affordability had to do with how our clients, property owners and developers, could utilize their own property. And housing affordability is an interesting topic under SEPA because it is, I think, one of the elements of the environment that, in a sense, does straddle the line between an environmental impact, a land use impact, and an economic impact. So, as the examiner knows, under...
I don't want to cut you off.
Oh, yeah.
I want to make sure that I lose track of what I was trying to get
yes.
to. So if you can hold your thought at yes. the same time you hear mine, I'll put the burden on you. What I'm... what I want to try to do is we could even put this in the context of parking and not just affordable housing.
Mm-hmm.
That was the other issue that was similar to an impact on residents. And I'm trying to tie those, I'm trying to understand what the impact is on the developer due to loss of affordability for residential units or due to loss of parking capacity. So that you can continue with the same line of response, but I wanted to share with you that's really what I'm trying to get to the bottom of.
Sure. And I think ultimately the impact to the developer is an impact to how they can utilize their property.
Okay.
And the ordinance will affect the physical characteristics and the other character in terms of housing, quantity and affordability of projects located on their properties. And so with regard to parking, the question is, how will this proposal impact the owners' ability to use their property as they would use it in the absence of this ordinance? The declarations indicate that application of this ordinance, particularly to these pipeline projects that we're talking about, would require a redesign. And I believe that's in both the Evans and Koppelman declarations. One of the ways in which they would be redesigned would be a limitation on parking. It's a impact to the physical construction that will occur on a project site, and therefore it is an impact that is more than economic. It has to do with the physical utilization of the owner's property. Similarly, with regard to housing affordability, SEPA identifies housing as an element of the environment, and the SEPA checklist includes questions regarding housing affordability. And those are in the record that's been provided as part of the declaration. These owners utilize their properties, both current and proposed, for housing and for housing at certain income levels. The environmental checklist asks about impacts to not only physical number of housing units, but the affordability of those housing units. And again, the question goes to these owners' ability to utilize their properties.
Okay. Any comment on that from either of the other parties?
No, none.
My other question was.
Excuse me. Mr. Examiner, I guess if we do have one point to make about vesting.
I guess I would say, in response to the appellants, that the proposal as it is now is silent with respect to when an impact fee might be proposed as part of a permit application. That's a policy choice that has yet to be made by the city. It could happen at the time of building permit, in which case some of the members of the Seattle Mobility Coalition would be affected. Otherwise, alternatively, it could projects that are currently have a master use permit could be exempt from an impact fee program. Currently, under the Mandatory Housing Affordability Program, projects vest to the fees that are in place at the time that a master use permit at the time that early design guidance application is made, which is very early in the process. So if the city were to take that route, then some of the members of the Seattle Mobility Coalition would not be affected by an impact fee program. But essentially, that policy choice has yet to be made about when impact fees might apply.
And if I may respond.
You may respond. I just need to clarify the nature of the testimony that I just received. Is this... I have a representative. All right, is this witness testimony or?
I would say yes.
Okay.
I would say yes, it is witness testimony. Yeah.
Mr. Keitel, please state your name for the record.
Sure. Yeah. Keitel Freeman, Seattle City Council Central Staff.
Do you swear or affirm the testimony you have provided is the truth?
I do.
All right. Your counsel for the respondents.
So I think this is consistent generally with the argument that the city has been making, is that in the future there may be some limitation placed on the transportation impact fees that is not placed by the action that is currently before the city council. And in terms of SEPA, under SEPA, and in particular one case that states this principle is the Heritage Baptist Church case that I cited earlier, for a non-project action, the city is required to look at the maximum potential, in that case it was development, allowable under the action that they're taking. And that's what the city is required to do here. If the city were to say in this ordinance, there are going to be XYZ limitations on these impact fees, well, then the city would be able to take those limitations into account in conducting its environmental analysis. But this action doesn't have those limitations. Also, the city could have included those in the DNS as mitigation measures. The city did not. So what we have to look at is the actual proposal that is moving forward to the City Council. And the actual proposal moving forward to the City Council has only one limit, and that is that these impact fees cannot exceed the value of the city's entire transportation system divided by the number of current PM peak hour trips. That's the only limitation here. In addition, it needs to be spent on the pretty extensive list of transportation improvements that are identified. The city had a choice to bifurcate this action into the comp plan amendment and development regulations or to proceed forward with those concurrently. The city chose to bifurcate them. Intentionally or no, if the examiner accepts the city's argument, would have the effect of forever insulating this action from CEPA review. Because this action mandates the fees, it sets a cap that's quite considerable, and it specifies the methodology by which the fees will be determined. Those things, if they're not reviewed now under CEPA, well, when the development regulations come along, the city will say, appellant, Seattle Mobility Coalition, you are now precluded from seeking CEPA review for these things that have already been determined. It's at this point that the city's making the decision to move forward with the traffic impact fees. They have the parameters that they have, and the city needs to conduct environmental review on them consistent with those parameters.
Mr. Mackos, Vasquez, you?
I would just add one thing that I had forgotten to mention is that Mr. Koppelman and his company have been involved with our organization, so that's another link back to the declarations that Seattle Mobility Coalition has offered to establish support for our appeal. I wanted to also...
I want to pause. We had a statement from a witness, and there was an opportunity to respond to that.
I will do that now. I wanted to get back...
Adding testimony to... enhance a declaration or something like that, you would have had to do that during your argument.
I understand. I just wanted to respond to your original question, which was about the impact. And my only point was going to be that, again, the economic connection to affordability is established in the CEPA checklist, and an aspect of that economic impact is uncertainty. And Mr. Freeman's comments I think reinforce the fact that there's a great deal of uncertainty associated with what the impact fee will actually do, and that's part of what we're arguing is a particularized injury ongoing as this is unfolding in real transactions in the marketplace when developers and builders are trying to decide whether and what to build.
Thank you. My other question is... simply about, if a party establishes CEPA standing, let's say for a specific issue, my property is going to be flooded, the property is clearly going to be flooded by the project, can they then raise any other CEPA issue that isn't necessarily related to the injury in fact that they can demonstrate for that item? Is there issue preclusion essentially with under CEPA, or is once you get into the tent, you're in to raise whatever CEPA issues you want? So, you know, if the flooded person wants to raise greenhouse gases or what have you, can they do that? Or under a motion, can that issue be precluded for them to bring that based on standing? And if you want time to respond to this at some other time, we can arrange for that. because I recognize it could very well be something we'd want to look at for case law.
Yeah, I have not done that, and I think I would want to do that. I think that it's as much as I would want to say about it right now.
Okay.
If we do have an opportunity for briefing on that issue, obviously I would like to.
I am going to provide that because the city's asked for it. It's a question to all parties. One party's asked for that, so we will do it in writing. Any party wants to comment on it now, they may. We're here. Keep it short.
Yeah. My belief is that once a party establishes standing, then they have the ability to raise general other impacts under CEPA, whatever impacts are identified in their appeal. But certainly we'll provide briefing on that. I did also just want to circle back to your earlier question about whether any residents are members of Seattle Mobility Coalition. Mm-hmm. And my recollection is that that is one of the allegations that we did make in our complaint, and that would be accurate. However, we obviously did not provide a declaration from a resident, and so I cannot sit here today and provide you with any specific information on that. Mm-hmm. And also, I'll need to distinguish. obviously, there are no residents of these pipeline projects yet,
right,
as they're not constructed.
Right. Okay. Thank you all again for the short notice in coming today, particularly to address our potential mess with the schedule. We'll wait to hear from the city on the timing, and then there's an opportunity to provide briefing on my last question. What you don't know when you're going to get hold of this gentleman?
I spoke with him earlier today, right, and I believe he's around, so I think I will have the opportunity to speak with him again today.
That'll be post-haste, so worst case scenario, maybe tomorrow morning.
Yep.
How much time do you need for the additional briefing on the question?
A couple days.
Monday or Tuesday would be.
We're still dealing with the timing issue, and you need a decision for me on this, as well as getting documents from the city so you can get your case ready. Let's stick with Monday for that. And if we hear that there isn't any way to expedite the process and you need more time on briefing, that'll be fine, because at that point we've got an open window. But you'll need a decision from me as soon as possible at the beginning of next week, essentially. So I'll need to get the briefing. There won't be any response opportunity. It's simply just a comment on the question, since we're in hearing, and I recognize it's could be a complicated question depending on your perspective of the law. So with that, is there anything else we need to address while we're here?
Just a question on the Monday. Is that something that we will be convening here to?
No, that's submitted in writing.
In writing,
right.
And we won't have a chance to respond to their
answer
to the question. Okay, but we'll get it in writing.
Yes, it's a succinct question about CEPA standing, and so I think that doesn't necessarily require too much debate. And I appreciate the parties indulging me in that. I was ready again to get the answer out. I have this opportunity, I'll take it. And with that, we'll close the hearing, and I look forward to hearing about our next phase from the city and the other parties.
Thank you.